Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He inspires small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for joining us, for hanging around with us today. I appreciate it. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast to coast. Rich Galen is our guest, and Rich is a political hack of the Republican persuasion by his own admission. He's the author of the cyber column Mullings.com, and you've heard me talk about that many times before. Rich is also, I think he's number 36 in the Democrats' deck of playing cards of the people that they're, you know, that they're after right now, and I think what are you in the on the playing card? Are you the Queen of Hearts? Is that?
Wait a minute. That was just experimenting in college, you know.
One little party, and you're branded for the rest of the world. Right?
Do it once, you're a philosopher. Do it twice, you're.
Rich, I appreciate you joining me. You're here today. You're here at this hour, and Donna Brazile is going to be on. Your old friend,
one
Donna
of my
Brazile,
favorite
who's
people.
Who's a political hack of the Democrat persuasion. She's going to be on the next hour.
No, she's really not. I truly am a hack, but here's the difference between the two of us. One of the differences between the two of us is I really am a hack, but she is truly a good, solid thinker about how government can provide the needs of the people that need it most. We don't agree on everything by any stretch.
Well, that's the reason
really
why
a good thinker.
That's the reason why I'm calling this interview and that interview the what ball game are you guys watching interviews, because we're going to talk about the same things with both of you, but we're going to get a different take from both of you, I'm sure.
You ought to do is have us back on. And remember, I don't know if you ever were a debater in high school or college, but there was a debate event called Switch Sides, where you would take, if I were the pro and you were the con, then halfway mm-hmm. through we would have to switch. And take the other point of view, and those were really pretty interesting.
Well, I do that every time you join, because you're the Republican. I have to play the Democrat.
That's
when
exactly
you come
right.
In. And when she's here next time, I'll have to play the Republican, and it wears me out. But anyway, let's talk a little politics. What's the president is able to sort of smile again? The war is basically over, and we still got some folks in harm's way over there. Let's don't ever forget that. But basically, there's no more war basically going on in Iraq right now. So he can actually smile again and act like he's having a little more fun, and he can go around and talk to people about his domestic agenda. How's it working?
Well, I mean, I don't know if you got to see the televised speech yesterday morning from Canton, Ohio, but I was over at MSNBC. A guy named Peter Finn, a Democrat, and I did a pre and post speech debate. And the thing that struck me, apropos what you were just saying, Jim, is that the president looked 10 years younger yesterday morning than I've seen him in quite a while. I mean, I think you're right. I think a good deal of this pressure has been lifted from his shoulders. And, you know, and now we can go back to the domestic front. And the column that I wrote this morning actually details the reason that the Democrats, who are putting all of their eggs into the basket of the re-election campaign of George W. Bush, will be a rerun of the re-election campaign of George H.W. Bush's dad, why they're wrong. And one of the reasons they're wrong is because, and this is specifically apropos to your listenership, is because George W. Bush was a governor of a state and has a very clear view mm-hmm. of what he thinks is necessary to get the economy moving again. His dad was a foreign policy expert and really left the domestic economic stuff for others to tell him, to give them their best thoughts, and he made up his mind. But George W. really does have a very clear vision of how to get this done, and I think
I never thought of Bush 41 as much as I, you know, I wasn't really all that thrilled with him as a president, but I do think he's a decent guy and a patriot. But I never imagined him rolling his sleeves up, and I imagine George W. Bush rolling his sleeves up.
Well, as I said, his dad was really the last of the. I think I put this in. I'm not sure if I put it in or took it back out. The last of the patrician presidents in the Roosevelts Kennedys, those folks, who were not only from families of stature and wealth, but were raised to be, to act in that way. George W. certainly is from a family of stature and wealth, but he was, I mean, he was raised in Midland, Texas. You can only be raised so high on the food chain if you're grown up in Midland.
They don't truck much with stature and wealth.
That's exactly
in
right.
Midland.
You know, you're sitting, you know where, you're sitting on you know what in the back of the bar, you know, wondering what happened.
Rich, hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back, we're going to get into some of the specific political issues that President Bush is pushing right now, primarily his jobs growth plan, which is basically the tax cut program, which is not faring too well, not only on the Democrat side, but in a couple of seats on the Republican side. We're going to find out who the troublemakers are right after these messages. 20 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back with our good friend Rich Kalin, and his website is Mullings.com. Go there and check out his cyber column. We're back at 17 till. Let me remind you, coming up in the hour straight ahead, we're going to be visiting with a guy named Rich Carney. Now, you haven't met him, at least not on this show, because he's with the Department of Energy. He's going to join us in a little bit to talk to us about some ways that we can stretch our energy dollars to because I'll tell you what, folks, we can't raise our prices. All we can do is try to cut costs these days, it seems. And so he's going to help us with that. Looking forward to getting Rich on the show. And then in the next half hour after that, we're going to be having a visit with Donna Brazile, as I mentioned earlier, who first time for her on the show, and we're gonna have that counterpoint to Rich's point in the next half hour. We're gonna talk a little politics with her. She's of the Democrat persuasion, and as you know, Rich is of the Republican persuasion. And folks, Rich Kalin is the only American not to get the memo about not traveling to Toronto this week. But you got to go where the business is, don't you, Rich?
No, I got the memo. I knew what was going on in Toronto, but, and in as much as this is the small business radio program, I think it's important to note that I had a client who said, I need you in Toronto for an all-day meeting. We're going to meet at the Sheraton at the airport. You don't have to go into the city. What's your hourly rate? I told him, and they said, okay, and I was on the next plane, pal.
And they said, we're not mailing your check. We have to come here to get it.
That's exactly right.
I understand.
Nice if I was American Airlines or something, but I ain't. I got to go where the money is, where
that's
the clients
right.
is to go.
That's right. Rich, what's the president is, and every, I mean, they're fanning out like ants from an anthill all over the country right now, promoting the president's bill. I mean, they're pushing this thing in earnest now.
Right.
He's been talking about it for a long time. It's actually 2001 Redux, isn't it?
Well, it's 2001 Redux, and it really, if the numbers work out right, it will be almost precisely what he asked for at the beginning of 2001. Right after he was inaugurated, the package that the administration put together, the tax cut and economic growth package, was in the area of $1.75 trillion. He ended up settling for about $1.35 trillion. If this package comes in between the House and the Senate, the House wants it at about $550 billion, the Senate wants it about $350 billion. Let's say they split it pretty much down the middle and the president gets about $400 billion here. If you put those things together, he will have gotten in the first term the entirety of what he had asked for right in the beginning. It's just that it took 3 years to get there. But that's what I was saying earlier, Jim, that that one of the advantages he has as having been a governor is that he understands the nature, the strategy, and the tactics of working with a legislative body. And so he knows you don't get 100% of what you ask for.
Right.
But if you work at it hard enough and you kind of pick your spots and you work it correctly, over time you will get almost everything you think you need for, you know, to do your job right.
He'll get
the entire package.
He also understands the negotiating concept of I can always come down, I can't go up.
Yeah, that's
so
also
you,
true.
You start high, you start high and negotiate down.
And you never negotiate against yourself. That's something that we all always forget.
But George Voinovich of Ohio,
right,
and Olympia Snow of Maine, and Lincoln Lincoln of New Hampshire. Rhode Island. Are the three Republicans that are in his way. They only want 350.
Right.
And, of course, Lincoln probably doesn't want anything, but they want 350. Bush wants 550. How is he going to get these three guys to come around?
Well, he may not have to. This is how the game gets played. Let's say that I want a tax cut, a total tax cut of $100, and it's spread out over 10 years at $10 a year. And you say, no, I don't want a tax cut of $10, I only want a tax cut of $7. Now, we can do that one of two ways. We can either drop the annual amount, or we can say, okay, we'll only put this tax cut in for 7 years. And you go, seven times 10, that's seven. Okay, that works for me. All right, seven, that's great. I'll settle for that. So it may well be that what they do is shorten the amount of time that this tax cut is in effect,
Thereby
getting the numbers to work for, I'm not sure Chafee and Snow will ever come around, but Voinovich might. And you might well pick up a couple of Democrats along the way by doing that, so you may not need them.
Yeah.
But the it's a game to some degree, but the reality is that the president wants to get this economy moving now, and then it'll be some future Congress's decision whether or not to keep those tax cuts in place or to raise taxes.
We don't have...
It's easier to raise taxes, unfortunately, than it is to cut them. That's the nature of Washington, D.C.
One of the things I think we need to point out here, Rich, is that whenever those who are against this cut complain about the deficit, ask them, if you're in their presence, ask them how much of that deficit is related to revenue and how much of it is related to them overspending in the last 18 months.
Yeah, that's what the president said in his speech yesterday, that that there are two sides to this thing, and the Congress is, Mitch Daniels, who's the head of OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, he has been the designated bad guy for this administration to walk up to Capitol Hill and say, you guys cannot spend this much money. But, well, we've all been, anybody who's worked in a large business knows that very soon you come to the conclusion that if it's the stockholders' money, it's monopoly money. It's not real money.
Mm-hmm.
It's only when you're in a small business and the decision is, do I buy a new printer
or
do we go out to dinner this weekend, that it becomes a real thing. So for congressmen and senators, and it's not unique to them. It's unique to anybody in a large organization. It really is not, it's not real money because it's the taxpayers' money.
Right. Folks, something that you may not know about Rich is that he used to work for a guy named Newt Gingrich. Many of you will remember that name, but he did, and he was solely responsible for Newt's fantastic success in the 90s. But Rich moved on to greener pastures, and Newt's been up to some stuff this week, and I suspect that he's maybe even made a call to Rich this week and said, Rich, I need you back. I keep messing up here. Anyway, Newt was in the news, and I want to get Rich to. I don't want to miss this opportunity to get Rich to comment on what Mr. Gingrich said and why he said what he did and if he did the right thing and what the repercussions are going to be. We're going to do that right after these messages. It's 10 till. We'll be right back.
When life grows a tired eye, I'll soon be with you, my love.
Back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Rich Galen is our guest, and he's the author and publisher of the cyber column Mullings.com. Check it out there at that website. You can subscribe to his newsletter. It comes three times a week. It's free, and it's outstanding. It's one of the best pieces that I read all week long, and I certainly recommend it to you. They're short and sweet and to the point. And even if you're not a Republican, even if you're a mugwump or an independent or a Democrat, whatever, you'll still enjoy it. And if you decide you don't, his newsletter is just like mine. Just tell him you don't want it anymore. He'll take you off his list. Rich, before we get into the Gingrich thing, before we get to that point, I want to ask you this one simple question. Is Mr. Bush going to get his $550 billion over the next six, 7 or 10 years?
I don't think it'll be five. Well, maybe over the next. No, it won't be over 5 or 7 years. But he will get approximately the same amount in that period of time as the 550, or maybe even a little higher, would have generated. What they'll do is they'll compress the length of time, as I was saying before the last break, and get approximately the same per year tax relief. Because the administration's figures show that if they can get 550 or the equivalent of 550. That'll generate half a million new jobs this year and a total of 1.4 million new jobs over the next 18 months.
And of course, let's don't forget the House had already approved the 726.
Yeah, well, they came down to 550 when they saw it was going.
Right, but they were approved the higher number. So we'll look forward to that. And by the way, folks, I'm in favor of the president's tax cuts because the more money small business owners have, that they don't have to pay taxes, that's more working capital, that's more money we can grow our businesses, we can pay more salaries, we can hire new people, we can buy new products.
Which is sort of the opposite of the Gephardt health plan, which would be, in effect, a tax on small business.
Right. That's exactly right. Okay. Gingrich. Folks, Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich are very similar in one way. They both seem to want to be in the spotlight. But Rich, you have an idea that they want to be there for different reasons.
Yeah, I think that I've thought about this a lot. And having worked with Newt and around Newt and argued with him, and we went through a five-year period when we didn't talk to each other. So I've had a fairly long and in-depth relationship with Newt. And we're friends. I mean, I like him, but he was wrong this week when he took off on the Secretary of State. But here's the thing: I think psychologically, what these two men have brought to the American scene. One, Newt is a combative guy. He's not really complete or full unless he's in the public eye and publicly fighting with somebody, whether it's Democratic Party as a whole, with liberals as a whole, or in this case with the State Department. Bill Clinton, on the other hand, has a real, and this is going to sound ironic, and I don't mean it to, but he needs to be loved by everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So you had Bill Clinton running around the world as president on one apology tour after another because he just wanted to be loved, and we're having to kind of clean up some of those messes now. But Newt is the son of a career military non-commissioned officer. He is an Army brat. He's a Pentagon guy. He teaches at the command war college, and I think he felt that that if there was going to be a public fight between the Pentagon and the State Department, that he was going to go defend his guys. But as the former Speaker of the House, I think that he probably overstepped the line about explaining his position, because again, Newt's debating style is not just to present his position; it's to try to destroy your position.
Yeah, it's in your
face.
And
he's very smart, so he's very adept at it. In that case, of course, it wasn't a debate; it was a speech, so there was nobody from the State Department to defend themselves.
But it wound up being a damaging message that could come back to haunt Mr. Bush.
Well, it might. I'm not sure that. If Newt had the kind of impact that he wants to have, he'd still be Speaker of the House. So, I mean, I'm not sure.
But that won't prevent the Democrats from still using it to set the soundbites.
Oh, sure. And that's you know, one of the things that you and I have talked about over the years is that the Newt Gingrich whole situation with Newt was one of the great proofs of the old theory: be careful what you wish for, you might get it.
Mm-hmm.
When the Democrats wanted to get rid of Newt, they got rid of him. And they lost their poster child. I mean, right. He was like the McDonald Arches. Mm-hmm. All they had to say was, Newt likes this, and 55% of the country hated it, whatever this was. When he was gone, ever since he's been gone, they've had to actually explain their positions, and guess what? They're getting hammered.
They've actually had to be for something instead of against something. Huh?
Exactly.
Rich, that's going to have to be the last word. Give us your website one more time.
www.mullings.com.
And by the way, folks, when you get to his website, the guy on the top left of his website, that's not him. That's somebody else. Thanks, Rich.
Rodin.
See you next time.
Thank you, Pat.
Rich Galen, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. And remember, next time you're thinking about taking a risk, think about this. A ship in the harbor is safe, but that's not what ships were made for. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.